This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 150. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name is David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. So it's 150 shows in of fabulous edutainment, cricket edutainment, which is a horrible portmanteau, but I think it sums up nicely what we do. We entertain while we educate. So congratulations, everybody, on getting to 150, and welcome back to the show, Garris.
Oh, many thanks. 150, I didn't get too many of those, so I'm very honoured to be part of it.
Well, I've never got one of those, so you're ahead of me.
I got a little 192, did I? Yes, I did. Thank you very much.
No, well, I'm very, very impressed. Which blind school was that against?
It was Ealing 341st team against the blind school.
Well, if you're listening and you fancy scoring 100, then maybe we've got the answer for you this week, because this week we've just announced on pitchvision.com a competition to win some prizes in association with Kevin Peterson and his new online coaching course, which is, of course, Keep Calm and Smash It, which is launching on March the 8th. And the competition that goes with that is a cricket bat from Adidas, some pads and gloves, so you can get into the KP mood, and then access to not only KP's online coaching course, but also £150 to spend on other online coaching courses, all on Pitch Vision Academy. So it's quite the prize. What do you think, Berners?
Absolutely brilliant. Seems like his bats are working for him at the moment. I might actually have to enter that myself, because I need some new kit. And I know Garris will be equally keen. He'll probably be stopping schoolboys from entering to get himself in the hat.
Correct.
Well, here's what you do for your chance to win the prize. KP, obviously renowned for his switch hit. So what we want to do is we want to see your switch hit. So it doesn't have to be in the nets, but you can play a switch hit wherever you are and with whatever piece of equipment you've got to hand. And film it on your smartphone or your digital camera and stick it up on YouTube and then email it to us at coach@pitchvision.com. And we'll pick the best one. We have a panel who are going to decide on the best one. And it's not just the best looking one or the one that's hit the hardest, but anything that's funny or clever or original, you get points for that as well.
I think it should be weighted on environment as well. I don't want to see the bulk standard net enclosure. I want to see people clubbing them through greenhouse windows and stuff.
Well, yeah, don't break anything, but including yourself. But I'd like to see maybe someone in the office with a folder and a rolled up bit of newspaper. Someone in the swimming pool maybe with a rubber duck.
Connection is vital, though. They've got to hit it.
Oh, you've got to make contact. Yeah. Otherwise, you've got no chance of winning. But it's a great prize, and it's pretty simple to enter for anyone who knows how to work a modern phone. So get your mate to stand there and hold it up, and then show us your best switch it, and then email the video link from YouTube to coach@pitchvision.com. But let's talk a little bit more about what's happening in the world of cricket this week. And there's been a lot going on in one-day terms. We've got the Commonwealth Bank series going on with India and Sri Lanka and Australia. And England have been thrashing Pakistan in the one-day game, which sort of went against the form guide, if you had a look at the form guide. And with all this cricket going on, there's been a lot of chopping and changing of side. So really what I wanted to look at this week was how important is bench strength and how important is having a settled team?
Well, it's a really good question. And I think in the context of the one-day game at the moment, you're seeing a lot of the sides and the more proactive sides, England being one of them, that have very much got one eye on 2015. And all the words that have come out of Andy Flower's mouth, Hugh Morris's mouth, and Jeff Miller's mouth as a head of selectors has been very much geared towards 2015, and they're playing players now that they want to find out as much about in the next year or so. So then the last 12 to 18 months is geared towards having that settled side that we talked about. So at the moment, their bench is quite big, but as you get closer and closer towards 2015, you'll see that England's squad will start to narrow down and you'll have more consistency. And I believe that's the same thing that's happening in Australia. And we've seen this week Ricky Ponting be left out. Very much talking about 2015 as a focus, making sure that the players that are playing in the 11 are going to be available for that. So exactly the same thing is happening both in Australia and also in England. And the aim is to get a settled side leading into probably that 12-month period leading up to 2015.
Berners, you've played a lot of club cricket. How do you see it at club level? Do you prefer to see a settled side, or do you like to throw the youngster in at the deep end and see if he sinks or swims?
I think it's interesting either way. I mean, it's nice to have... I feel that a competition for places is often neglected in club cricket. You know, people settle in and certain people are always picked in first teams and some people are always picked in second teams. So having that kind of rivalry between the teams keeps you on your toes. But then from a kind of game-playing situation and knowing your roles and knowing that you've got, a pretty formidable unit, it's quite nice to keep a settled team. So if you're a team that's, vying for a championship or something like that, it's probably more important to keep a kind of the strongest unit together, because that's inevitably what's got you to the top. So, I guess a bit of both. Depends, really.
I mean, the challenge, I think, looking at club cricket, is that when a youngster's bought in, say an opening batter from a seconds has got heaps and heaps of runs, very rarely does he actually just come straight in and open the batting in the first team. And I think sometimes that's a bit unfair on the youngster. And what you tend to happen is they might start off at six, but then you want people that can give it a whack at the end, and they end up batting at 9 and 10 and not actually learning anything. One of the things that we did 2 or 3 years ago is we had a very settled side down at Chard where I was playing club cricket, is that we had 10 players that were available virtually all of the time and were the top 10 players. And we'd rotate the next best 3 youngsters into that side. So they picked up the experience of playing in the higher level of cricket and playing with some decent cricketers and playing in good competition. But they wouldn't be stagnated by batting 9, 10 and 11 every week in the first team and missing out on their opportunity to bat and bowl in the second team. And there's a real balance to that. Now, that's different in international cricket, obviously, because you've seen this week that Josh Butler makes his debut and he bats at 5. You see that Danny Briggs has made his debut and he bowls in the same position that he does for Hampshire. But at club level, it can sometimes, a player can lose half the season just by being involved, but not necessarily playing the role that he's been playing in the second team or will actually play in a few years' time. And that's a difficult thing for clubs to manage. I've only seen very few clubs that have really backed the youngster. He's got 600 runs in the second team to open the batting in the first team. That's a rarity. And actually, as the season went on, a couple of the lads played quite significant roles. And in the subsequent years, they've taken leading roles on the side. So I think you have to really think about that. That's the challenge of it.
It's interview time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. And every week we talk to somebody involved in cricket at some level or another. And this week I'm delighted to welcome Paul Williams, who is a ECB club level coach, who is the area head coach for the East area of Hertfordshire here in the UK, coaching 10 to 15 year old youngsters at representative level. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hi, David.
So, Paul, the kind of boys that you're seeing, they're kind of they're talented youngsters coming from the club game.
Yes, that's right. We've got boys who have got aspirations to play county cricket, and my aim is to help develop them through from the club game up to the next level.
Is there anything in particular, is there a kind of a pattern that you see of the kind of youngster that comes through? What identifies someone with that bit of talent that some people have that others don't necessarily?
Most of the boys that we see are looking to go that little bit further. They have a determination. Some of them are there just to make themselves better cricketers at the club level, but lots of them are just thinking, what does it take for me to become a county cricketer where I've not quite succeeded in the past? And that's what they're hoping we can give them.
And you've been organising pre-season nets this time of year. Of course, it's busy as we approach the season here in the UK. One of the things that you are responsible for is the overall plan. So what do you try and achieve during the pre-season period with the players in those age groups between 10 and 15?
Yes, that's right. What the programmes entail is that we're looking to start off by getting the basics. It depends a lot on the age group that we're working with, but first of all, we're looking for the basics, getting the skill levels right with the shots and the bowling that they're playing, then developing that on to make sure that they understand what the outcomes are going to be when they've got those skills right, and putting those into a context, such as the shots that they're playing against spin bowling, for example, or how the bowlers are going to use the skills that they've got for bowling away swing, for example, into a match situation.
What kind of length do they play at the level that you coach?
Well, even at under 10s, they'll be playing 40 over matches, up to 50 over matches at the under 15 level.
That must be quite a challenge for the younger kids to get through that length of a game, especially if they're in the field and the ball's not coming to them much.
It absolutely is. And the first time they play those matches, it really is a big challenge, particularly if it's one of the very hot days. During the matches, we do make sure we get plenty of drinks breaks agreed with the umpires so that we can keep going on and keeping them going. So that's one of the things we do have to make sure. We do have hour and a half training sessions to try and make sure that they keep their interest so they get used to having a long time training. So hopefully that will get them used to things.
Fielding is often considered the third skill, and yet it's the thing you spend the most time doing. So at the level that you're coaching now, that the kids coming through now, how much more is the focus on fielding than it was, say, you know, 15, 20 years ago when I was, you know, learning the game, and fielding was definitely seen as something you had to do rather than something that you wanted to do and enjoy?
It's certainly something that I make sure that I get fielding drills done at the beginning of every session that we do. And I put an emphasis on how important it is as a team element and how important it is to the bowlers to save every run, take every catch, and how you can be part of a team by saving 15, 20 runs in the field. And hopefully that message will get across by the end of the programme. Whereas certainly 15, 20 years ago, we were just in a net bowling and batting, and I can hardly remember doing any fielding practicing. Maybe at the end of a cold night of nets in, you know, early season, you'd get some catches smacked at you in the gloom, and you didn't know where it was going, and that didn't make fielding fun.
What kind of issues do you see with the young players from a technical point of view that are common in things that are going wrong with their skills?
I think at the youngest age levels, I think lots of the boys obviously get their first impressions of how to bat from their parents, and they're not getting the first basics right, so getting the grips and stance worked out, which can give them the ability to play a basic straight back shot, and getting balance in their shots. Once you've got that sorted out and they get an understanding of what they can do from a sound basic technique, and then they can understand where they can hit the ball all around the place, wherever they want to, just because they've got a balance and a good grip. They can see that instead of just hitting everything through mid-wicket and mid-on. And so get that straight from the beginning and you're there, really. You can move on from there and get the various shots started. But the other thing that we do struggle with, particularly as I'm now getting these lads having to play the longer game, is shot selection. They really can't work out whether or not they need to defend it, leave it or attack it. So we do work quite hard on making them play the right shot.
And what about the bowling side? Are there any technical issues you're seeing there at the moment that pop up again and again?
Well, what we're looking for on the bowling is making sure, as much as anything, that they're getting the follow-throughs right and getting the basics in terms of each type of bowler needs to get their basics right. I use a lot of visual aids, particularly with the younger players. I use stills from photos from magazines. If we're talking to them about whether or not perhaps their favourite bowler might be Jimmy Anderson, say, and I get a photo out of a magazine of where his follow-through is and that he's gone halfway down the pitch. And they can see that, and suddenly they realise that if they've stopped straight after they've bowled, the ball's never going to go anywhere. And simple things like that make them understand. With the older boys, I tend to use a bit of video so that they can see the ball they've bowled. I can break it down a bit, and we can just work on one piece at a time without trying to change everything or work on everything. And then they can come back and have a look at how it's going from, you know, delivery to delivery almost. But at this time of year, it's the time to get the bowlers making any slight changes that they need to make. I won't try and work too much until they've got their basics right on doing too many variations in delivery until they can land most balls in the right place. Then we'll start talking about, can they bowl in swingers as well as away swingers? Otherwise they're starting to overthink and overcomplicate things.
Well, it is important to keep it simple. It's one of those maxims, isn't it? It's to keep it things as simple as possible, but no simpler. And I think that's an important element in all coaching and cricket coaching as well.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, thanks very much for your time today. Best of luck for you and for the boys that you're coaching for the pre-season, and hopefully they'll all have a resounding success when the summer arrives.
Oh, I do hope so. It's going well so far.
We're going to be answering your questions now, and we've got a couple of questions this week in the running for a prize, which this week, as every week, is an online coaching course on Pitch Vision Academy, courtesy of pitchvision.com, and you can see the streaming videos and download the ebooks and everything from pitchvision.com/academy. So, Berners, we've had some questions come in this week. You've picked a couple out. What are the two questions in this week's mailbag?
Our first question comes in from Paul, and he's in the processes of taking over an under 12 squad, which is an amalgamation of two clubs, and he's starting to consider who he wants as captain for the A team. So he's got a couple of guys in mind, and one is a very good cricketer, however fairly quiet, and feels that he could be the right man for the job, but he's not too sure he's got the commandment skills that would be required on the field. He's also got another guy who's a bit more of an extrovert, as potentially a vice-captain. So I was thinking he could pair the two up to let them kind of blend. And just wondered if we had any advice or tips around this.
Well, my initial thought is that you don't necessarily need someone who shouts and screams. You know, you don't need a Nasser Hussain character to be captain necessarily. Just because someone's shouting a lot doesn't automatically make them a good captain. You can have captains who are quite quiet and just know their stuff and just quietly get on with things, and they command the respect of the rest of the team. So I don't necessarily know if vociferous is an essential captaincy trait, especially at that kind of that age group. But I don't know what you think, Gareth.
I completely agree with you. Leadership's about being authentic and being real and being yourself, but doing it with skill. And you can start doing that from under 12s. And yeah, you know, if you've got a young kid who's obviously got a good amount of experience, even at the age of 12, obviously can play a bit. And his quietness may be a strength of inner thought and reflection and planning and all of those things. And those should be highlighted rather than trying to pin on and cut and paste other people's abilities or skills into anybody. And I mean, I was lucky enough last week, myself, Matthew Hoggard and Michael Vaughan worked together over in the West Indies on a camp for super skills travel. And on it, obviously, Vaughan displays great leadership skills in everything that he does. And he's no different now in helping me lead that tour last week to as he was when he was captain of England. And basically, he uses his skills and his natural abilities to the best of his extent. He doesn't try to be loud or vociferous or, you know, he doesn't try to be overly physical or any of those things, because that's just not him. And if he started doing that, you'd think, well, why are you doing that? You know, why are you trying to be something else? But equally, the other message that came out of Michael when he was captain of England is that he wanted leaders all over the pitch. It wasn't a case of having him as captain and maybe a vice captain. During his time, he didn't really have a vice captain as such. He just used the people around him and asked them to be leaders. So if he did have somebody who was quite extrovert in Freddie, for example, he'd want Freddie to be extrovert and be skillful being extrovert. I mean, if I said to you who's the vice captain of India, would anybody know?
No, I don't know who is.
Absolutely, because he leads in an authentic way, and Dhoni leads in an authentic way, and he's got a number of other leaders on the pitch that he taps into. And the same with, you know, the same with Cookie now. I mean, I assume that somebody like Brodie would be vice captain, but I don't know that if Cookie went off the field. But he uses people around him, and that's the way that he should be going: authenticity and making sure that everybody has leadership skills and trying to develop them as leaders in their own right.
I must say, I always like a silent assassin. I'd much rather play with someone who's got something going on up top and he's thinking about the game. And like Gareth has just said there, even if it's, you know, he creates a network almost in the team of go-to men, rather than someone who stands there and, you know, balls instructions and one of those guys that's very kind of dominant and wants to be the figurehead. Someone who can just, you know, just it's reassuring to know that you've got someone who on there is getting about their work and they're thinking about the game maybe when you're not, even though, as Gareth just said, you probably should be. You should be a leader in your own right, even if you're stood at fine leg looking at a bit of talent walking past, like I quite often do. Yeah, it's nice to have someone out there that's quietly absorbing what's going on. And you as a player have got the belief that, you know, that guy can do that. So it's, I like to take the easy way out and let them do it.
Yeah,
on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean the classic one that springs to my mind is Mike Brearley, particularly in the 1981 Ashes series where Botham was decided to counter attack against the Australians, and he looked up to the dressing room to make sure that he was doing the right thing, and really just sort of made that universal symbol of keep smashing it with, you know, where you're moving your forearm backwards and forwards. So that was great leadership. You didn't even have to say anything. It was just reassuring both of them that I want you to do what you do best. And he went and did it spectacularly.
Next question's in from Maddie, and he's just wondering about form, really. So it's talking about a player coming back from a good performance, like scoring 100 or taking a fifer, and then having the ability to get into that routine straight away and do that in the next game. Is it a mindset thing? He says that he's got a problem of falling short pretty much every time after a good performance. So I'm sure Gareth has got some interesting help with regards to this question.
Yeah, I call this milestone management, really, and milestone mindset. And you see it a heck of a lot at all levels of the game. And in this instance, we're talking about the next game, but you also see it around, you know, 50s and 100s. where players have done all of the work and then just sort of lose their concentration, lose their focus, lose their processes that had got them from 0 to 100, and then walk in, you know, 101, 102 out. And this is what Graham Gooch talks about a lot in terms of getting daddy hundreds, yeah, big daddy hundreds, and the ability to go from three figures, from 100 to, you know, 150, 175, 200s. And that's all about managing your milestones and almost, you know, retaking your guard might be a bit over the top, but starting again. The same thing applies when you go score 100 in the first innings of a game or 100 on a Saturday, and then the next game you go out there feeling like you stood on 100 and you nick off instead of remembering what the process was that got you from 0 to 10 to 20 up to 50 to 50 to 100 and beyond. And it's the same with bowling as well, you know, because so many things can change from one game to the next. You get a five for when the ball's swung or when the wicket's been a bit grassy and the conditions might change. And the best ones are the ones that remember what they do when they're at their best and how they have to adapt it to the conditions that they're facing.
I agree. I think it's a matter of being aware of the mindset, the particular mindset that you're in. I think that's the first step to it anyway, because if you're the type of person who thinks, I've got my 100 now, I've done my job, I've got a couple of games now where I can relax, which there are plenty of people who, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, think like that. Well, I've got my 100 now, so I'm okay for a few games. And then they stop doing the thing that got them the 100 in the first place. So you have to be aware of that, of when that something like that is happening. If you've done well, you don't want to say to yourself, well, I'm okay now, it doesn't matter if I get naught. All right, you know, you might get a good ball, first ball, and, you know, that's that. But you want to continue to say to yourself, right, I know I'm in form now, I'm going to make the most of it, because it's going to be a time when I get a run of low scores, and I want to make the most of it while I am in form. And that means starting the next innings and playing in the same way again. So, yeah, I completely agree with you. My angle on it, if you like, is being aware of what your mindset is when you go into the next match or the next innings. Bodice, here's a question for you. If you would you prefer to score in four innings in a row, 100-0, 100-0, or 50-50, 50-50?
100-0,
100-0, 100-0. three noughts as opposed to 650s in a row.
Yeah, I go for the glory, mate. You score 50, you barely get a ripple from the clubhouse. You score 100, at least you get a few free pints after the game, don't you, and stuff.
Oh, really?
All personal gains, all personal gains. I think, though, going back to this actual question, essentially what he's saying there is, wouldn't this be the defining part of someone who has the potential to go on and be a professional in any sport, the ability to be consistent with very good performances? Because at the end of the day, if you're a guy who scores, you know, maybe you score 400s throughout the season, you know, okay, can definitely bat, can definitely play, good player. But if all those scores in between are, you know, between 0 and 10, you're probably not putting him in the same bracket as someone who consistently can score an average, a high set of runs, are you? If you were a selector, say, from a regional academy or side.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what level you're at. If you can knock out consistent big scores, then you're going to get noticed. And, you know, and whether that means that you end up becoming a professional cricketer or not, you're maximising your ability. And we've all seen, haven't we, so many players that, you know, every bar conversation, I say, he's such a talent. He was such a talent. Scored the best 100 I've ever seen, but that was his only innings of the summer. Mm. And really, if he then starts every time he goes out in the same way that he got that 175, then it gives him that level of consistency and a foundation to build off of. And we see that so many times with talented players, you know, who can bowl a great spell because everything just clicks and they seem to control themselves in the spell, whereas the rest of the time they're searching for it and trying different things. You know, it's exactly the same. And the model is consistency. They've obviously got the talent, because you don't get a big 100 or five wickets without having the talent, but it's that model of consistency that really matters, and whether it takes you to professional level or not, you'll get so much more out of your cricket as a result, and your teams that you'll be associated with will benefit.
I do question the system, though. I knocked in 5 in 5 once in football for Pinno Spartans, my local team. Sat by the telephone for about 3 months waiting for Exeter City to give me the call. Say, we understand you're knocking them in with your head, your feet. You've obviously got great skills. Nothing came of it. And I just thought, what's it all worth? You know, 5 in 5 at the age of 12. I should have been in Italy last night for Chelsea, but no, missed. Had to take up cricket instead.
Well, on that rant, I think it's probably time for the soapbox.
I was going to say, I thought that was the soapbox for a minute.
Okay, so Berners has had a little bit of a warm-up for this week's soapbox, and he's got another minute to rant about something that he likes. Hopefully it's not going to be football, because this is a cricket show. But Berners, over to you. What's your minutes rant this week?
Well, it is all about people beating the system again. And this week's rant is predominantly focused at bowlers and their inability during training to bowl a legitimate ball on the actual no ball line, and instead of bowling balls from about 17 metres. It's just, I can't understand it. It's unacceptable. And the whole psychology of it in their heads, their small heads, these bowlers, must be that they don't bowl fast enough, so they want to put some extra revs on the ball. But I mean, purely and fundamentally, from a training perspective, it's ridiculous. Their line, their length goes all out of the window. They bring that into the live game. They're nowhere to be seen. So land in the right place, give everyone some decent training, and stop whistling it past my ears at 90 miles an hour on some nice quick vinyl on a Sunday morning, because I've normally got a hangover and I just don't need it. So bring it back, bowl proper cricket balls, and hopefully we'll save some runs in the season and you'll become a better player. Amen.
Amazing. Amazing. So after that incredible blast from Berners, that is the end of this week's show. But before we go, it's just enough time to pick a winner for this week's competition. And it was a couple of good questions this week. Paul's under 12 captain and Maddie's success after success question. So, Gareth, which one do you think was the best one this week?
Well, I honestly think this is the toughest one we've had to choose between the two, because they're two absolutely brilliant questions. And in other given weeks, I'm sure, you know, if they were against other questions, they'd have won. But I'm going to go with Maddie's one, because it promoted a lot of conversation between ourselves, a lot of topical stuff that we can relate into the international game at the moment. But most importantly, I think it's relevant for youngsters, if they can get used to managing that milestone and reaching those milestones and going beyond those milestones, then they're going to maximise their cricket.
Congratulations, Maddie, and you win a prize, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if anyone else listening wants to enter the competition, then all you need to do is send in your question. You'll get your question answered. That's guaranteed on the show. And then if it's the best one of the week, then you win the prize as well. So, Berners, how can somebody send in their question to us at the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show?
They can drop us a quick line on 020-88-167-691. Or alternatively, drop us an email, and the address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, they can. And you can also get us on Twitter, at PV Cricket Coach, and you can find us at Facebook if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. If you want to listen to the show every week, and let's face it, who wouldn't? It's the most entertaining cricket show on the internet. Then you can head to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, give us a 5-star review, and subscribe in iTunes. If you don't want to use iTunes, you can use something else. That's fine by us. Head over to pitchvision.com/academy, find the podcast section, and you'll see the feed to the show, which you can enter in manually. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.